It just says, once we have attached to anyone, come hell or high water, you must stay in the boat. And to me, that just does away with democracy. And what I've seen over my lifetime is the benefit of two parties. It is to protect a country from just having one voice saying, we go, everything goes as long as the party says it, as long as these people say it. And it's almost like a check and balance. It just says, you know, maybe we didn't see what the other one saw. So it is your job, you know, in the betterment of our nation, my brothers and sisters, it is that we ought to have strong debate. We ought to have debate in such a way that we are seeking a common answer.
Welcome to Faith in Each Other. I'll be your host, Jordan Howard. And on this show, I want to dive into the minds and the beliefs from people of all walks of life, baby boomers to millennials. No question is off limits as we learn together and go through the journey together of seeing where we as a society have gone wrong and where we have gotten it right. I believe that our faith in each other can lead us into a beautiful future. Each episode, I will be joined by Reverend David Williams, my pastor, and his good friend Tom Ingram, as we talk through challenges facing our society today and gain an understanding from different perspectives. Let's dive in. Hello, everyone, and welcome back to our show, Faith in Each Other. I'm your host, Jordan, and of course, I'm joined with Tom Ingram and Pastor David Williams. Hi, guys. How are you doing?
Doing well.
Good.
Good. So today's topic, we're going to talk about a couple different people in our world. Herschel Walker and John Fetterman. Now, Republicans and Democrats differ substantially over several factors, including faith, freedom, health, and hobbies. Today on Faith in Each Other, we'll be looking at a couple topics people to really understand if and why being a Democrat or Republican really matters. Today we'll be discussing Herschel Walker and John Fetterman. Walker is running for Senate as a pro-lifer, even though he's personally supported two abortions from past relationships. And John Fetterman is running for Senate, claiming no impairment, even though he is clearly experiencing issues from his recent stroke. Now, what's disturbing is to see people defend both is such a delusional way where only being a Republican or Democrat matters. Now, Tom, do you believe the information about Herschel Walker being a pro-lifer and having pressured women into getting an abortion is being exaggerated?
Well, I think once you have two women that are both claiming the same thing and they both have checks that he wrote to them. Yeah, no, I think it's really clear that they're telling the truth. And then he comes out and just calls him a liar, which, you know, I got a problem with that, too, really. You know, if they're telling the truth and you call them a liar in national debate, that's almost as bad as what he did in the first place. But no, I think that what they're accusing him of doing is true. And I believe that if it's true, it shows him to be the ultimate hypocrite. And I think in a lot of ways for our leaders, that's the worst thing they can do is ask us to live up to rules that they have no intention of following themselves. I mean, I think that's just the worst leadership you got. So hypocrisy like that to me is something that it should exclude him from being in the Senate. And in fact, it hasn't hurt him at all. He's gone up in the polls since Revelations came out.
Interesting. Pastor Dave, what are your opinions on Herschel?
You know, Jordan, I was thinking about both of these candidates and what we were learning from them. Herschel Walker, I believe, not just these women and what they're saying and the life that he's found himself in. I think there's a bigger issue at play. I think our moral compass in America is totally broken. Morality is just no longer a a metrics at which we judge each other, I think, and have an acceptability with it. The marker is always moving. And so then, since it's always moving, then I think we have no moral standards that matter or we will honor. I think we'll just move them when we want to move them. You know, the markers just will change. I'm saddened in the Herschel Walker dilemma totally. For a couple of reasons, it amazes me how they have chosen this guy, this particular guy, to be their spokesman for their issues and the things that they believe America needs to come back to. And you can clearly see, and I just have this huge pain for Herschel Walker myself. You know, after a while, you get past the laughing, you get past the humiliation, and it just reminds me of the classic. How do we divide people and races? This is the old one. How do we come inside of any people group other than to conquer and divide? So you go and get you didn't look. I just want to believe they did not look for a candidate to espouse the Republican position. I think they needed a person who would divide a people. And right. It fell directly to a Herschel Walker. And this is the oldest playbook in American history. And I think history of individuals. And so it pains me to see Herschel play into this with his own life. And it's a lot more than what we're seeing. And so it's not just the two ladies who came up to talk about him or to say whatever, but I just think it's a sad moment that people are saying over and over, in spite of, he's the guy for us. In spite of, he's the guy for us. And it has nothing to do with his value or his stand against abortion. I think it's greater than that. And it's sad to me that he would allow himself to be the puppet to be laughed at and believe he's actually showing a position that will help, I think, Georgia and the country for that position that he's in. So it's more than, you know, did he lie or are the women telling the truth? It just gives a sad commentary on who we are as a people. So that's right now where I fall with Herschel Walker.
Okay. Now, Tom, if we can't turn on our own politicians, then they have a license to do whatever they want. What's your biggest fear if your politician does what he wants, or in this case, Herschel Walker? Do you think he's part of a bigger scheme? Like Pastor Dave said, he's meant to kind of divide a group out there. Or what are your thoughts on that?
Yeah, no, I think that, I don't think I think he ran for Senate with the best intentions. Sure. That's what I think. And I think that people voted for him with the best intentions. But the problem is that somehow at some point, how we vote and politician behavior have to come together to meet somewhere. And when the politicians do something bad, maybe this isn't a good case. Maybe this is a bad example. But when politicians do something bad, there has to be an effect on their popularity. And that's what the problem, what I got with the Fetterman thing and the Walker thing, is these terrible revelations come out about these people. And there's no effect on their polling numbers. Nobody changes how they vote based on that. So that means to me the politicians can do whatever they want. We have no control over them anymore. And the only control we have over our politicians is I'm a Democrat, and if you, the Democratic candidate, get out of line, I am prepared to vote Republican. That's the only discipline they have, and that's what's gone now. You can act however you want, and I'm going to vote for you because you're a Democrat. Well, what I'm telling you is they get to do whatever they want. And your question is, what am I afraid that they're going to do? I'm going to afraid that they're going to divide people, turn people against each other. I'm afraid that they're going to steal money. I'm afraid that they're going to start a war to distract people from other stuff. There's all kinds of dangerous stuff they can do. But we need to understand that, yeah, I'm a Democrat, you're a Republican, that's cool. But we're still kind of on the same side against all the politicians, a little bit. And when they do something bad, we're prepared to go to the other side. The only way our system works, is if it's okay if the other side wins. If the other side wins, you don't storm the Capitol, right? You let them run a government, you go into opposition, and you try to be respectful. That's the only way our system can work. And right now what we have is a system where how we vote is determined, predetermined, and we can't change our mind. And that's just weakness.
Okay. You have a comment on that, Pastor Dave?
Yeah. You know, can we switch our votes when the person that, you know, we are following, that we are endorsing, can we switch that vote? I think we have now, the bar has been set to where that's not possible anymore. And that eradicates the democracy. It just does away with it. It just says, once we have attached to anyone, come hell or high water, you must stay in the boat. And to me, that just does away with democracy. And what I've seen over my lifetime is the benefit of two parties. It is to protect a country from just having one voice saying, we go, everything goes as long as the party says it, as long as these people say it. And it's almost like a check and balance. It just says, you know, maybe we didn't see what the other one saw. So it is your job, you know, in the betterment of our nation, brothers and sisters, it is that we ought to have strong debate. We ought to have debate in such a way that we are seeking a common answer, you know, that is best for our nation. What I'm seeing and witnessing today is that is no longer the case. You're seeing politicians, I mean, who will say, and please hear me, I am not railing on Trump. That's over for me. But when I'm hearing politicians say, I will say whatever it takes so not to make him mad, so not to make him be right. angry and come after me, you know, that I will say, you know, you have politicians now who are just saying, you know, I am, you know, now in 2022, as we're looking at the 22 election and the 2024 election, you just have men and women just screaming, I'm now Donald Trump. You have to vote for me because I'm now Donald Trump. I'm the woman, the lady in Arizona. I'm the woman, Donald Trump.
Right.
I'm going, oh my God, you know, you're just saying, you're saying, I'm selling myself, to a group of people, to a number that will put me in an office. I'm saying whatever needs to be said that I might get the blessing, quote, of the king. And our politics have basically been, you know, it's not so much as the blessings of the king. It is the responsibility to the republic. It is the responsibility to its people. And that now, Jordan, is totally wiped out. I will say whatever I believe, I get the biggest number of votes. Now, I don't think this is brand new, but it is so much in our face now that when we even talk about how people lost faith in each other, oh, I think we've been losing faith with each other. But today, it has just been heightened about we care not about the man or the woman, who they are as they seek for a higher position. We are just now just saying, if you're going to be Democrat, just be Democrat blind. Just you don't have to have any integrity. You don't have to. You honestly don't have to speak the truth. We don't care about the truth either. All we want to know is, are you popular enough, or are you willing to sell your soul enough that we can use you to take a position or to secure a position that will afford a Democrat or a Republican the majority vote? And that, to me, was not what we said we would be at as a country. And I am just saddened by why would I even tell any of my kids or the kids I work with, why would I even tell them you should be a politician? You have a voice to speak in community, to make sure that you speak up for, you know, the hurting person, because I can't even guarantee them that is how we will treat them as a defender of justice and righteousness, when that's not how you arrive at a position. Right now, it is swear allegiance to a party and do whatever you want. And so I think that's the turnoff. At least my children, that's the turnoff of the vote right now. That's they don't believe anything that people are saying in any direction.
Right. And that's where you end up with when you do this, when you just let, you know, then it's all
like that,
you know.
And that's sad, Jordan. That's just sad.
Absolutely. Now, not to beat a dead horse, one of the women supported, you know, her claims with the $775 receipt from the abortion clinic, the get well card from Walker, and a bank receipt that showed an image of a personal check for $700. Now, he made a statement. Herschel Walker said that it is unfair to expect a man to remember every single abortion that he has ever paid for. Do you think he was trying to convey something else, or what was the deal with that? I mean, how many?
No, that was a mistake.
There's only two.
Yeah, that was a mistake.
A real statement.
But the other thing, too, though, I got advice for everybody who wants to run for the Senate. As a pro-lifer, if you're asking your girlfriend to get a divorce and you're an ex-football star with millions of dollars, don't give her a check for $700. Give her a check for $10,000, right? I mean, he wants to pay for the abortion plus no markup. Just like, I mean, yeah. I saw that. And
I will say that when he said, a person can't remember, you know, all the things that he's done. Mm-hmm. I think as best as he can come off intelligent, and I say that with the greatest of respect, but as best that he knows how to speak with wisdom, with intelligence, I think he's trying to stand alone with men and women who have so much more to lose when they go, I plead the fifth. I just plead the fifth. You know, hey, don't ask me anything. I plead the fifth. And I think his advisors probably push that toward him, is when this question comes up, all you have to do is basically say, how can I remember everything? You know, I don't remember even what we had for dinner yesterday. To me, it was it's another sign of the water that Herschel Walker is trying to swim in is way over Herschel Walker's head. And that's not a put down from him. It's just a reality. The waters he's trying to swim in that he himself would say, yes, I'll run for senator, or it could be the same thing. I'll run for president of Tom's business. Okay. Just say, Tom, you know, there was somehow your company needed a, your position. For me to say, hey, I think, you know, y'all need to give it to my friend here. And he doesn't know the first thing about engineering. He knows not the first thing about machinery. He knows, but I think he'd be a great candidate. You know, your company, would laugh me out of the state. I think this is what we've just seen with a Herschel Walker. It's not totally about him as a person. But I think there are those who are just telling him, hey, man, all you got to do is sit tight. We're going to get you where you need to be. And Herschel, I think in his naivete, maybe he himself does not realize the position they're putting him in, because I think they're singing louder. I think he has a Donald Trump in his ear. I think he has some strong men and women from the Republican Party in his ear. And they're just saying, you suck it up. If you take the pain, we will help you in this position. And that to me is sadness of how both sides go, both Herschel and the party. I wish they would say, we brought a candidate, a Republican candidate, who sees the real needs of Georgia and the true needs of the United States. And this is who we put up. They went for the person furthest away from that position, and it shows. And for us African Americans, it was their best play to place an African American against an African American. What you have is an intellectual against a kindergartner. You have a David against a Goliath. And that is sad to me, because that's a commentary we've seen over and over. So, you know, I don't think he was smart enough, Tom, to even say, instead of giving you a $700 check that can easily track you back to how much does an abortion cost, give me $50,000 and you never hear from me again. You know, and so that to me, it is politics right now at our worst. And we have, and I must say this, we have come to the point where I used to think debate mudslinging was the worst we could do. You know, you go dig up stuff on the other. Well, when you were in the seventh grade, you know, you took two candy bars. That is now no longer, we're now no longer in mudslinging. We have pulled the gloves off, and we will create a scenario and call it on both sides, all sides. This is true. I mean, we will take a half a truth and just slam it out there and say, this is the whole truth, and this is what's going on. And now the average Joe Schmo has no idea of really what's behind the curtain. And so we go to the polls blindly now, because we only have the ability to grab a snippet, and we're hoping that you'll get me a job, that you will help me come out of poverty, that you will help. But those who are grabbing these positions, these are coveted positions of wealth, of power. And it has nothing to do with the people they serve anymore, because they found that this is a credible way to move into that fame and fortune, and it can come at the expense of the average person with no problem. That scares the bejeebies out of me right now.
Yeah. The McCartney Institute for Democracy at Penn State polled 1,000 people and found out that Americans are not only divided, but baffled by what motivates their opponents. Now, considering the current congressman that have suffered from a stroke and their ability to perform their duties hasn't been questioned. Why do you think John Fetterman is receiving so much negative publicity regarding his recovery process and his ability to perform his duties?
Yeah, to me, we have every right to know our candidate's health status. I think that's a fundamental principle for all voting. We have a fundamental right to know if you're capable physically of doing the job. This is a fundamental right we have as voters that the candidates should have to tell us. And John Fetterman lied to us all. He told us he wasn't impaired when he was. He obviously is. I'm not saying he can't be the senator or whatever. But what I'm saying is that we have a right to know whether you're physically capable of doing this job. There should be transparency on that issue for the voters. You violated that principle. And again, it didn't hurt him. His poll numbers didn't go down after the debate when he was unable to speak. And that's what Senator Schumer told the president on the tarmac just yesterday. It's like, it looked bad, but we didn't lose any votes. So again, it's the same thing where he's lying to us, and it's okay because I only care about abortion. I don't care who's actually in the Senate. I just want them to vote my way on abortion. And what I'm saying is that once they can do whatever they want, if they can lie to you about their health, they will. Everybody's going to do this now. All of a sudden, we're going to be deprived of this information. So what I'm saying is if you're just voting for the letter and you don't watch what they do at all, that is politicians gone wild. That's what you got. They can do whatever they want, and we can't do nothing to them. They can do whatever. We can't do nothing. They can lie about their health status. They can lie about, you know, their past and whether they've had an abortion. They can do all of that. And we can't, it doesn't impact their status. And that's the problem. But like when I was young, Nixon got in trouble, his own party turned on him, right? Mm-hmm. His own party turned on him and threw him out of office. Then Clinton got in trouble. It would have been way better for the Democrats to just say, hey, you know, you got to take one for the team. You got to go away. We're going to make Gore president. He's going to run as an incumbent. You've embarrassed the party. But no, and it's not because Democrat, Republican, right? It's just because the situation shifted. Back in the 70s, it was okay to turn on your own people. And then the 80s, once we get to the 90s, Cold War's over. No, we're sticking with our guy. He's one of us. I don't care what he did. We're sticking with our guy. And that's where we are now. And you just can't run the government. It's not a practical system.
Tom, I hear exactly what you're saying. But again, I guess I'm drawn to that place where we have, you're right, we've given our politicians permission to say to the camera whatever it takes to secure a position. And we don't care about it until the polls tell us to care about it. If the polls don't go down, you didn't hurt us. If the polls are not, if the needle doesn't sway, we can write it off as it was a moment. And I think where that rubs me is we do that when it comes to age, you know, because again, age, one moment we're saying, you know, let Biden and Donald Trump go, you know, we all knew how old they were going to be when we elected them. But what we started to say is once they got elected to their position, all of a sudden now age is an item. You know, they're going, you know, Donald Trump would be, I think he's 72 or 73 somewhere right now. And for him to run again, he would be 78. I think if Biden runs again, he'll be 80, you know, when he comes in. But it's funny how I think in our marketing way, we know how to spin the very thing about a person to grab, I would say again, the illiterate voter. You know, we can say, if you vote for him, he's a liar, but it's only he's a liar. It's not that both parties are liars. You're right. We have, it's just how you spin it. You know, he's a liar today. You know, Trump daily was saying, You know, hey, my taxes are all done. My taxes are all ready. And they'll be out here next week. You know, just wait.
Yeah. Really good example.
They'll be here next week. And we just going, leave him alone. His taxes are.
We still haven't seen him.
But everybody now is still saying, but he's the man. He's the man. He's.
He's on our team. We're with him. Doesn't matter what he does. He's one of us.
That to me is what we're breeding right now. It doesn't matter what you say, as long as the poll doesn't change. If it changes and it changes too drastically, we may have to call you. But if it doesn't, if it changes 2 points left or right, you're fine. To me, that is the final indicator that I've been reading this document on Lincoln the last 2 weeks. And one place that Lincoln talks about, he says, Lincoln, if I'm trying, I can't quote it verbatim, but Lincoln talks about the impact of the Civil War, because it was in that moment that he had made his mind up where he would stand on slavery. And Lincoln eventually said, you know, it wasn't just for the betterment of the United States. Lincoln kind of looked at, you know, if slavery is going, if slavery is something we need to stop, then let the vote come that way. Because he woke up one morning after a sleep, and he said, he asked God in a prayer after speaking with a Jewish rabbi, and this is a long story, but he just said, God, in the morning, if we win the battle, if we win, I forget which battle, one of the northern or one of the southern, if we win it, I'm going to say it's time that we do away with slavery. If we lose this battle, and I can't remember if it was South Carolina, somewhere in South Carolina or North Carolina, but he says, if we lose it, I'm going to, and the South wins, it's going to be an indicator for me that slavery can be continued, because the South will have shown us that that's what we're. Mm-hmm. And so what I'm learning about Lincoln is he saw the fragility of the people of this nation. And he saw that in one way, it's going to lead us down this road. If we go this way, it's going to lead us down this road. And I'm very clear now, we are not the people that Lincoln saw this nation to be. We are so far away from what Lincoln and others were trying to invest in this nation. We are so far off the path that I think in one line he says, and I, again, I'm going to have to dig this paper back up, but he says it's happening and it's going to be the destruction of America. And I think we are definitely on a path that is maybe, I'm not prophetic, but we're definitely on a path that is destroying the very integrity of America. And because we cannot see it, we are just morphing into something worse and worse and worse. And I think in what we're morphing to be, none of us, I don't care if you're Democrat or Republican, are going to be ready for what the final outcome is going to be. And I think that's because I'm watching it happen right before my, it's no longer politics. We have moved so far out of politics. This is about the, may the best man win at any, as Malcolm X says, at any means necessary. And we're using any means necessary to secure presidents, to secure senators, to secure congressmen. We're using all sorts of ways that I don't think we built in to America. But what can I say other than this is not what I read was the hope. And this paper, it calls it what the founders intended. We are so far off that track. This is amazing to me. Sorry to go off on that tirade, but I am no longer believing we are the country that is politically minded about what we're doing. We've become the country that says it is, we are more concerned about a few garnering the positions that will demand and control this country at whatever cost. And though we may lose a huge portion of it, I think there are those who are saying, then lose them, then dispose of them, and we will start afresh. That's dangerous. That's dangerous to me.
Absolutely. So before we move on, I want to mention at his inaugural address, Lincoln said, "Why should there not be a patient confidence in the ultimate justice of people? Is there any better or equal hope in the world? In your hands, my dissatisfied fellow countrymen, and not in mine, is the momentous issue of the Civil War. The government will not assail you. You can have no conflict without being yourselves the aggressors. You have no oath registered in heaven to destroy the government, while I shall have the most solemn one to preserve, protect, and defend it." So I just wanted to mention that. Like you said, he understood the fragility of the government.
Yeah.
And it's no longer about that. We can't even fathom the mindset to begin or begin to empathize with the other side anymore. Can we ever get away from these extremes? You know,
it doesn't feel like it, Jordan.
Speaking on turning on your own politician, it's only possible when we have faith in each other. Losing an election is only okay if we believe the other people of the other side, at least a little bit. Do we remember Howard Dean back in 2004? And he literally dropped off the planet over a sound of pure excitement and empowerment. The Dean scream is what they called it. It ended his career in electoral politics. Are we going to witness another candidate lose their traction based off their own supporters being unafraid and willing to drop them?
Yeah, no, Howard Dean, though, he had that a moment after he lost that election. He went kind of ballistic, but he'd already lost the election beforehand. But no, I believe that President Lincoln, A, has it right, B, understands it a lot better than me, and C, can explain it a lot better than me. But what he said, it kind of, in to summarize that quote, is if with public support, anything can be accomplished. If we want to, if we have widespread public support, our democracy will be able to accomplish anything, right? The power is with the people. Right. It's not with the government. The government isn't powerful. What matters is in our heart. And in Mill City, they were talking about the Beatitudes on Sunday, or it wasn't, I was at the show last Sunday, but the Sunday before that. And what they were saying is, you know, the battlefield of God's kingdom is in our hearts. Mm-hmm. Right. It's, so if we can accept them in him in our hearts, then everything will be okay. And to me, that's the way democracy is too. If we build consensus among ourselves, we'll be able to achieve anything. But the weakness of the system is that somebody says something, you get angry, and then there's all that, and then you get so divided you can't agree on anything. And that's where we are right now. But no, President Lincoln completely understood the weakness of democracy, and he tried to explain us. And, you know, the message of faith in each other, that's just a poor reflection of what he was trying to teach us.
Mm-hmm. Well, Tom, if I can say this, that spirit must be in us, you know, when that spirit that reminds us of our uniqueness and our bond as human beings, you know, then we will respect one another. We will honor one another. And I think with Mill City, when they're talking about the Beatitudes, what to me would be a nation who has surrendered to our humanness and our newfound love from God that flows toward each other. I would tend to advocate it is that love is more and more being shut off or being made evident. It to me, this is one of the biblical scriptures of the spiritual forces in the world that are not flesh and blood that Paul talks about in the book of Ephesians. He says, for we wrestle not against a spiritual wickedness in high places, but we wrestle against flesh and blood. I think we are seeing a turn from God in a high rate. And then because there is a turn from God in high rate, then we are becoming more and more oblivious toward the sacredness of the human being, our neighbor. And in that, then it short circuits everything for the good of humanity. And I will use another stuff that they came back to me. Lincoln, and I think in his inaugural speech, he talks about almost being the chosen people. He talks about almost in reflection to Israel being the chosen right. people. He also said we had a good chance at not replacing Israel, but doing a greater work in humanity like in Israel. But he said he fretted that we were losing even the ability to almost being that type of reflection, you know, as a democracy. And to me, in reading that document, I realized again how powerful his words were. As much as we want to say, you know, we are a light to the world, if anything, we are showing how dark we have become. We are not showing how, you know, inch by inch we're becoming brighter. We're showing inch by inch how we're becoming more and more dark toward one another. And it's being made evident in our, I think, in our political systems. And that's just one of the ways. But we're still fighting hunger. We're still fighting poverty. We're still fighting all sorts of other evils. But Lincoln was very clear when he says we were almost the chosen. And when I look at the politics, I go, now I know what he was saying. When we lost the, when we lose human love, oh man, there's nothing on the table that's sacred anymore. And so I will do whatever I want to do. I will be as hideous as I want to be, but I don't have to be a Jeffrey Dahmer. I will pick my poison and go after that poison group of people. And right now I'm wishing and praying that we will hit our bottom sooner than later because of the expense that is going to cost us. And right now I just went back. I just had to go back to read about why Lincoln felt, did he feel God was calling his country, or did he really feel that something else was happening? And in his religious experience, he kept reiterating what we had to gain, but there was something that I think he was afraid we were going to lose. And I think we're losing right now, and we're seeing it in big pockets in our political ways. Again, excuse me for rambling.
No worries. Well, thank you for that. And as we draw near to the end of our episode, Tom, is there any advice you would give to those voters out there to encourage them to be unafraid to turn on their own politician? If you can reach the world, what would you reach out with?
Yeah, no, I'm definitely a broken record on this subject too. And to me, the only way that our system can work is the Republicans have to win sometimes, the Democrats have to win sometimes. Right? If the Republicans win every election from here on out, there's no reason to have them. If the Democrats win every election, there's no reason to have them. We need to change power back and forth to cleanse the system, to get the corruption out of there. You get thrown out and then you go back in. And so Democrats have to be in power sometimes, and Republicans have to be in power sometimes. For our system to work, it has to shift back and forth. And then when the other side is in power, we need to support them and hope that the country is successful. Right now we have a situation where half the people are hoping that the country is unsuccessful at any time to make the government that they don't support look bad. And that is not a viable system. But the only way is faith in each other. We have to believe in the other party when they're in power. That's the only way out. And I believe that's what Lincoln was saying. And I believe we are God's chosen people. I believe that. The American people, you, him, me, are chosen by God to bring democracy to the world. I believe that this is our God-given responsibility. I really believe that. And that's why it's so important. You know, it's not just for us. It's for all future generations. That's why Lincoln, that's why he was willing to sacrifice so much for the war. He wasn't doing it for the people who were alive then. He was doing it for us. But it's for all people. It's for all future generations. We are God's chosen people to bring the idea of democracy and prove to people that it can work. And right now we're failing in that moment. That's what's sad for me.
All right. Pastor Dave, is there something you'd like to give advice on?
I would probably say it may be darker days yet to come than brighter days in the near future. Am I wishing that for our country? In no way. But when we have decided we are God, when we have determined that the answers lie solely within us or the party, to me, when I read the scriptures, when Israel decided they did not need God, it's when their darkest days came about. Their enslavery came about. Their destruction came about. The temple was destroyed. The diaspora became very evident. You can't live here anymore. And I'm just taking that from our Christian Judeo approach. I would tell people that looking to a party solely is dangerous. Looking to an individual solely is dangerous. And it has never, in the history books that I read, it has never fettered, it has never came out good when only thing we said, we will abdicate our power to one person or to one group.
Right.
And I just say, we really got to think about that. And we must be careful if we're slipping into that way.
Okay. Well, thank you so much. And as we draw to an end, I want to leave us all with our closing thought here. In a time where our country is so divided that our family members, friends, and neighbors are written off and relationships are ended, can we ever see eye to eye again? Can we have more to our identities than merely our party affiliation? Can we say we truly love everyone? We have to regain faith in each other, and we have to save our democracy. Let's all do something this week to gain some faith in each other. And of course, I want to thank you too for joining us today. And I want to thank all our viewers. Thanks, everybody. And we'll see you next time.
Thanks, Dwight.
Thank you so much for listening to Faith in Each Other. I hope today's conversation encourages you in your journey to have hard conversations and, most importantly, to listen to others around you. If we're going to have faith in each other, I believe we need to be willing to have hard conversations, and that is what we aim to do on this show. We will see you next time on Faith in Each Other. If you enjoyed this show, please share it with someone you know. See you next time.